Sarah was tired. She'd slowly found herself buried under a pile of responsibilities, the kind that repeated day in and day out. Make breakfast and pack lunches, drive the kids to school, go to work, cook dinner from scratch for her family, work freelance jobs, nights and weekends to make ends meet, fold laundry, and the list went on. Until one day.
I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't sort of pretend to be okay. I couldn't pretend to enjoy things that I wasn't enjoying. I just couldn't do any of it anymore. And so I had to kind of really re-examine my life. I guess I'm at an age where friends of mine are starting to get sick, or I'm seeing people in really unhappy marriages where they're putting up with things because they feel like they have to stay married and they have to behave a certain way. And I just don't want to do that with my life. It's become really clear to me that this is the life I have, and it's the only one I have, and I just want to live it in a way that feels really authentic and right for myself and for my kids.
I'm Donna Cleveland, and this is the third episode of Women and Radio, a podcast that explores how the beliefs we hold shape women's lives. Last episode, we explored the strange history behind why our culture is uncomfortable with moms expressing their sexuality. As I delved into this topic, I realized that so many women strive to fit into a sort of cookie-cutter image of motherhood, and that this image dictates much more of a woman's life than just her sexuality. That's why I've created this follow-up episode, featuring two intimate interviews with women who are part of a population that face some of the greatest parenthood challenges, and that's single moms. Here, we'll get into the real day-to-day struggles and triumphs of being a single mom, and how these women are forging their own way in the world. Without the traditional family structure, social support, or financial help, these women are left not only doing it all, but also figuring out how they want to live their lives in the process. While the majority of kids in America grow up in two-parent households, the percentage of children living with single moms has more than doubled since the 60s, going from just over 10% to 23% today, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Just for context, only 4% of kids live with single dads. Jen Haylett, a professor of sociology at the University of Iowa, who we heard from last episode, pointed out that this population of single moms does not have a long history to refer back to. Unlike married women, they're left to fashion their own approach to parenting.
Just that population of singles who have been divorced or never married but who have children has grown dramatically just within the last probably like 70 years. So that's a new population that didn't necessarily exist before, when people were not getting divorced as often because it was difficult legally or not accepted culturally or whatever. So in a lot of ways, these women, they're kind of like writing the script.
What you are about to hear are how two women, as Haylett put it, have gone about writing their own scripts. Sarah is mom number one in this story. I've been working with writer and editor Sarah Kingsbury for the past 6 years. We've become close friends and confidants, and I've had the privilege of being let in on some of her big life moments. Her oldest daughter going off to college, her divorce, which she's currently in the process of finalizing, her debut on Tinder, her piercing her nose and dyeing her hair platinum, and most recently, her romance with a college professor. She's one of my favorite people, and her insights as a single mom and as a feminist have had a big impact on how I see the world. Today, Sarah is 41 years old and works full-time to support herself and her daughters, who are now teenagers. When I first met Sarah, she was working so hard giving to everyone in her life. By nature, she's one of those people who finds herself volunteering to bake cinnamon rolls for a work party or offering to host everyone at her house. She'd spent most of her adult life doing things for others and being a good mom and a good wife. But that often meant that she didn't have the energy or means to do the things that made her feel fulfilled and happy. Her journey into motherhood began while she was studying for her degree in French at Minnesota State University. She was dating a student from Cameroon, and they had two daughters together, Susanna and Tasia.
I think that I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I mean, my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and also my dad is physically handicapped, so she also just did all of the work around the house because my dad was just not capable of it. And she was a good mom. Like, we ate really great meals, and she was always there if I needed anything. But she was also really unhappy, which I didn't, like, fully understand. And so I never really thought I wanted to get married, but I knew I wanted to have kids, and so, you know, having kids with a partner just makes more sense. And that's kind of how our society is set up ideally, although, of course, that's not necessarily the reality. But then, you know, I was a single mom to start off with. I have two kids, and their father and I did not stay together too long. And I began to see, like, it's very empowering to make your own money and to feel like my kids have needs and I have needs and I am capable of meeting those needs and accomplishing things in the world. And also the idea that motherhood should be like all fulfilling. You can be a mom and that's all you need to do in your life. You know, that will like fulfill all your needs as a person. Nobody would ever say that to a man, right?
Like Sarah, mom number two in this episode also became pregnant while in college. In fact, Raquel Perry gave birth to her daughter, Layla, in 2016, the same year that she graduated with her bachelor's degree in biology at Hampton University in Virginia. Today, the 25-year-old lives in Arlington, Virginia, with her 2-year-old and works in payroll at American Airlines in Washington, D.C. I met Raquel last year at the Amber Rose Slut Walk, which, by the way, I'll be sharing my experiences at the protest in next month's episode. While attending a conference the day before the protest, Raquel caught my attention as she delivered a 10-second elevator pitch for her newly launched women's empowerment brand called Mom Slay 2.
Our mission is to inspire mothers to embody their sexy within.
A couple of weeks later, on a Skype call with Raquel, Layla was just waking up from a nap.
Our special guest has risen. Say hi.
Oh, she is adorable.
He just woke up. Say hi. No. She's not in the mood.
When talking to Raquel, it was clear from the start. She loved her baby.
She's getting into her own attitude and her own personality. So she'll tell me no when she doesn't want to do something I ask her to do. But she's also very helpful. Like if I need something thrown in the trash, I always ask her because it's something she loves. She goes, trash? And then she'll run over to the trash can and throw it in the trash. And she's a really little helpful girl. I wish I could show her on camera now.
But even as crazy as both Raquel and Sarah are about their kids, that doesn't mean they haven't struggled as moms.
It's been rough, and I won't ever deny that part of motherhood. It's been rough. Being a mom, you're already busy because that job title or that title in general never goes away. Like when you're at work, you might be a teacher for these hours, whatever, but like you're a mom literally 24/7. Like that title is never going to go away. I'm still at the point where luckily I have a lot of support around me. And I thank God for my mother every day because with her, there are a lot of things that I would not be able to do.
As we began talking, Raquel shared how she got thrown in the deep end of parenting.
Okay, let me give you a little backdrop into my pregnancy. So going into my pregnancy, I got pregnant to a guy who was not interested in being a father. And I mean, that wasn't my concern at the time. Okay, I don't need you. I can do this, you know, on my own. Not having her father around isn't necessarily hard, but of course I would have liked for that relationship to be there. But that's a decision that he has to make. I can't make that decision for him. Hopefully he'll turn around and we'll get there. But being a single mom for me is liberating because I don't always have to say, hey, I want to take Layla here. Is that okay with you? Or this weekend, such and such wants to babysit Layla. Is that okay with you? Like I have the chance to pretty much make my own decisions when it comes to her. And I kind of like that because I dictate where she goes, who she's with. I feel comfortable doing that.
While Raquel's pregnancy was unplanned, she still feels that having Layla was very much something she chose.
Sometimes being a single mom is a choice. I chose to be a single mom. Like, it's not something that happened to me. That's something I chose. That's the route I chose. Honestly, true story moment. And there's nothing wrong with abortion. There's nothing at all wrong with abortion. I have friends who have done it. I've been in a situation where I'm on the phone with a friend while she's going through it. that's something that I would never judge another woman on, because again, it's your choice, it's your body, you're able to make that decision. However, I knew for me that that wasn't a decision that I wanted to make.
Through interviewing Sarah and Raquel, I began to see a parallel theme forming in their stories. As single moms, they both began to feel isolated. When Raquel was pregnant, she sought out information to help her prepare for her baby. She remembers looking through mom blogs and parenting magazines and having the realization that stories like hers weren't being represented.
When I was looking for different outlets or different sites or anything that I could kind of relate to the story, I didn't see that.
Why do you think it is that there aren't many brands or voices out there that are tailored towards single moms? Because it's so common.
It's very common. But I think that it's kind of looked down upon in our society. And I'm not exactly sure why. I think now we're getting more comfortable with the term single mom. But I think that it's still looked down upon, like, well, why is she single? Like, where's the father? Why isn't the father with her?
For Sarah, her feelings of isolation came from the expectation that her kids alone were supposed to make her happy.
I think I really had no idea what I was getting into. I had a lot of theories about parenting, but, you know, everyone is like, oh, my kids won't be the ones screaming in the grocery store, right? But then, you know, trying to parent when you're sick and you're tired and you're busy and your kid is just not cooperating with all of your well thought out plans of actions that you've read about in these parenting books, it's quite different. And I actually felt a lot of shame about how difficult it was for me, that I didn't just like unconditionally love my kids at all times. I mean, I did love them at all times, but I also like kind of resented them sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if you're tired or sick. If your kid has an immediate physical need, you have to meet it. Mm-hmm. So there's really like a lot of actual sacrifices in some ways. And then working is very difficult. Childcare is so expensive. So I wasn't sort of prepared for the negative emotions I would have about parenthood. Mm-hmm. And I felt a lot of shame about them. I felt like I was alone in feeling those. I feel like the best moment for me was I was with a friend and our daughters were the same age and we were at the park and I guess she'd been having a hard day with her daughter because her daughter came up to her and she had this teeny little scratch and she's all like, I'm bleeding, mommy. And then my friend just looks at her and she's like, good, I hope you die. And I was like, wow, I've never said that.
Like, you're like, know? I'm doing fine.
I mean, she's a great mom.
No,
you know?
Totally.
Like, but I was like, I am not alone in just being fed up sometimes and not loving every second of this and actually hating a lot of seconds of it, you know?
Yeah.
And then I sort of started talking to her about it, kind of confessing some of the difficulties I was having. And then just that kind of opened up being able to like confide in other people, because I feel like there's a lot of sort of pretending like I'm doing really well, like my baby's wonderful. I can't admit that sometimes I want to throw them out the window.
Conversations like these gave Sarah some temporary relief. But she kept getting confronted with what felt like reminders that her life should center 100% around her children.
Once you become a mom, people think that's all you are. People don't think about moms as having outside interests or being separate from their kids. I just remember being so desperate to talk to other adults about things that weren't my kids, because even when I got together with my friends, they were all moms as well, and it was like all we talked about was kids. I actually had someone, really not probably very legally, tell me that they weren't going to hire me because I was a single mom and they thought that I would just always be missing work to take care of my kids, which was pretty outrageous.
This pressure to conform only intensified when it came to their love lives. According to these two, good moms shouldn't date.
If you're a mom, society says you should already have a male partner, and so you shouldn't be like trying to attract men. And if you're trying to attract men, say you're a single mom, then you're neglecting your children. If you do anything outside of, you know, taking care of your children, you're neglecting them.
Raquel admitted that she used to judge moms for dressing sexy and trying to attract men before she became a mom.
Sometimes I probably did look at a mom like, I don't know if you should be doing that.
Now Raquel feels differently.
Me going into motherhood is what changed that for me. And I was like, okay, now I understand why these women were dressing like that. Because at the end of the day, they're still women. And to me, being a mom is probably the sexiest thing that a woman can have or whatever. Like, I think I wear heels now more than I did when I wasn't a mom.
That same snap judgment Raquel used to make about moms, Sarah felt from people too.
I feel like people stopped seeing me sometimes as a sexual being.
However, there were other problems that were putting a damper on Sarah's sexuality as well. Fatigue, logistical roadblocks, and body image issues.
What really surprised me was how much I didn't change, but how hard it was to continue being me. I mean, having sex when you have kids is hard. It almost felt like I shouldn't be dressing sexy because I would fail at it. I had a really hard time dealing with the changing of my body. I have stretch marks and I'm heavier than I used to be. And, you know, my breasts aren't like all perky. And I felt really self-conscious about that. And there's not a whole bunch of nudity in our culture beyond like maybe in porn or models like lingerie models, or you don't see like actual just normal people bodies. And so it's easy to feel like my body is really unattractive now.
As the conversation went on, it became clear that financial stress also deeply affected her ability to feel confident when dating.
There are a lot of single mothers and there are a lot of people who don't make very much money, even if they are in a partnership. And so it's not enough to say you have permission to buy yourself nice clothes or do nice things for yourself, because honestly, like, people are really struggling financially, and when your kids are growing all the time and there's a limited budget for clothing, you are actually not going to be buying clothes for yourself. You are going to be buying it for your children. And if you have a budget that really doesn't have much room for luxuries, then of course it's going to go to the family first, not you individually.
As I began to see a full picture of the challenges single mothers face, I found myself feeling even more impressed by everything Sarah and Raquel have accomplished in their lives so far. Raquel launched Mom Slay 2 in May of last year. She started a blog where she features a new mom every month, created a smartphone app, and launched a Mom Slay 2 apparel line to go with it.
Have you been doing most of this work yourself, or do you have a big team to like create the app and the website and all this?
No, it's all me. Do I hope that the brand will grow into a point where do I need an assistant? Do I need a publicist? Do I need a blogger? Do I need, you know, a photographer? Do I need a videographer? Do I need all of that? Yes, I do. But for right now, it's all me.
While the mission of Mom Slay 2 is to empower all women, Raquel is especially dedicated to giving a voice to women of color and single moms who you don't see as often in mainstream media. In her Mom of the Month blog, she includes Q&As with women covering topics ranging from career to fashion advice to their biggest fears for their children and thoughts on modern day feminism.
What I wanted to focus my brand on was women empowerment. And when I think of women empowerment, the word slay is automatically a term that I know that I use a lot. When it's like, slay girl, go on, slay, you're slaying. That's like my go-to comment when I say things. And for me, slay means like you're either doing a good job, you're doing a great job with whatever you're doing, or you look great. In our society, sometimes you look at moms and you're like, eh, she shouldn't be wearing that. And then it's just like, no, why can't we wear that? At the end of the day, we're still women. You know what I mean? Like, if I want to have cleavage out, let me have some cleavage out today. And that to me is just like slay. Perfect. Mom slay too, not just women slay.
You mentioned earlier that when you were pregnant, you kind of started looking online and you weren't really finding the information you felt like you needed. Like, what kind of support were you personally looking for that you weren't seeing represented in other brands?
Encouragement, different, I don't know.
Do you feel like a lot of the parent magazines or blogs only show
the good side of pregnancy, or like the
or like
side.
A cookie cutter picture of what?
Yes. And motherhood is so much more than this lavish lifestyle or this gold lifestyle. That, don't get me wrong, motherhood's amazing. But there are certain times where we go through things that aren't necessarily talked about. And I want Mom Slay 2 to not only give you that empowerment to talk about it, but to share your story and get empowered once you maybe read a blog post or something that somebody also went through that.
For Sarah, her breakthrough occurred a couple of years ago when she split up with her husband. I remember her walking into my office, sitting down, and quietly telling me that she decided she needed to get a divorce. I was struck by the expression on her face, which was one I hadn't seen before. She wasn't angry or even sad, really. I think what I saw was clarity and resolve.
I mean, I feel like it was a culmination of a lot of things. The breakdown of my marriage with my kid's stepdad, where I just looked at it and I was doing everything. I was doing all the childcare. I was doing all the housework. I was, you know, that people talk about like sort of the emotional labor and sort of managing the household. Like that was definitely what I was doing in addition to working more than full time. And so I was just kind of burnt out in that way. And one of my best friends from childhood has stage 4 cancer, and other people my age who I went to school with, like some of them have died or gotten sick. And also at some point it's like, why do I have to be so unhappy? I've struggled with depression a lot in my life, and that's probably something that I'll never not have some struggle with. But I just got to a point where all those things were kind of piling up on me, and I just couldn't do it anymore.
The change didn't happen overnight for Sarah. She went through the slow process of separating, and for a while, she struggled with depression. Then time passed, and she started building a new life. It started with little things. We went out and got margaritas, and she pierced her nose, something she'd wanted to do for years. She cut her hair short and bleached it blonde. Eventually, she bought a house, started taking art classes, began dating, and struck up a romance with a college professor from a nearby town. While in the past she may have told herself she was being selfish for doing some of these things, she now began to see them as crucial parts of her life.
I'd always spent all my spare money on like activities for my kids, and I always wanted to do creative things. I hadn't really had a chance since I had children, but it felt like really selfish. My daughter takes art classes at school, and she's like, yeah, but I would love to take art classes outside of school as well. And I had to say to her, well, you already have art classes at school, and I also get to like do things for myself, and I want to give my kids a chance to like take different lessons and explore those things, but my needs are also important.
Both Raquel and Sarah have taken big steps in creating a life that they love. Well, part of that for both of them has been letting go of worrying about judgment coming from other people. Sarah said when dating, it's been harder when that judgment's coming from her youngest daughter.
After my husband and I split up, a friend of ours got me on Tinder. And so I started dating, and I wasn't really interested in having a serious relationship with anyone. So, you know, I was casually dating a few men, and I didn't like bring them home. She didn't meet any of them except for every once in a while in passing. But she, at one point, I told her that I was going out to dinner with someone, and she's like, you shouldn't have so many boyfriends. You're only supposed to have one boyfriend at a time. Basically kind of slut shaming me.
Sarah works hard to be considerate of her daughter's feelings, but she also knows that some of her daughter's discomfort comes from the very cultural ideas she's trying to break free of.
Yeah, my worth as a human being and as someone who is deserving of love and respect is not actually tied to how many men I've slept with and what I did with them when I slept with them. Sex is a really wonderful thing to experience and enjoy, you know, unless you're asexual, and that's not, you know, but most people like really you have sexual desire, and it's wonderful to like share that experience with another person and enjoy it. I do think that women who have a lot of sex are considered less valuable, like their value to men is less, right? I think it probably originates in the idea of women as property, and then I don't even want to say it. It's so gross. Like used goods, right? Especially if you're a mom, the idea that you're like want to have sex with a bunch of people is deeply inappropriate. You know, there's so many things. And I like to think that I'm super liberated. And in some ways I am. I feel so much more comfortable with all of this than I ever did. Like the fact that I can talk about it is amazing. But, you know, like those patterns of thinking and feeling are really strong. I never felt like I was a slut for having sex when I was a teenager. I was in actually a really nice, serious relationship that was very, you know, loving and great. And it was a very wonderful introduction to sex. But I definitely felt really afraid of people knowing that I was having sex and them judging me for being slutty.
Sarah said she's still working on building up a positive body image.
People who aren't a certain weight, whose body doesn't look a certain way, the idea of them feeling sexual or being sexual beings, people think it's a joke or they shouldn't feel that way, which is kind of sad and also really bad.
How has that matched up with your experiences though? So you like felt kind of nervous about that or whatever, but then in your dating experiences?
I've never taken my clothes off in front of a guy and had anything but great appreciation. In some ways, I feel like probably if they've had much experience at all with women, most men have probably seen more naked women and different varieties of bodies than I have.
Sarah likes to joke that she's getting a chance to live out the 20s she never had. Raquel, however, embraced that phase during her college years.
Before I was pregnant, before I even knew I was pregnant, whatever, I was in this like liberation stage where if I wanted to go here, I was going there. If I wanted to go out with this boy, I was doing that. If I honestly wanted to have sex with this guy, that's what I was going to do. That was a period in my life where I was like, yeah, I'm doing this and that's what I'm doing. Okay, so transition into me being a mom. It was just like, it just flowed. Like, now, no, I'm not going to do the certain things that I was doing before. I had my daughter. Do I wish sometimes I could go back to that life? Maybe one day down the road. Okay, so sometimes when I say certain things or put certain things on, even my friends will be like, girl, you're a mom. You can't do that. And I'm like, if you only knew.
While Raquel is restricted in her movements for the time being, while her daughter is still young, she has learned the importance of living authentically and urges all women to do the same.
If there's anything literally that you want to do, do it. So when my friends say that, girl, so what? Yeah, I'm a mom. And like, you're just because you're not a mom doesn't mean that you can wear this and I can't. That distinction is totally off. I now will walk out with heels and have some cleavage out and be holding my daughter's hand walking down the street. Like, that doesn't bother me at all. And whoever wants to look at me and has their judgmental idea or whatever, so be it. But my advice would be to live your true self honestly at all times. If there's a lipstick color you want to go for, go for it. If there's a 6-inch stiletto you want to put on while you're taking your daughter or son to the playground, put it on. Don't think about what anybody else has to say to you, because they're not walking in your shoes. They're not sleeping in your bed at night, and they're not driving your car or taking care of your child at night.
Sarah and Raquel have never met and are living totally separate lives, but I noticed certain qualities they share: a hard-earned perspective, down-to-earth attitude, and a resilient sense of fun even through difficult situations. And they ultimately shared similar wisdom. You don't have to abandon yourself and your own desires in order to be a good mom. Sarah has come up with a system to help her identify when to put herself first or second, or okay, at least not last. Creating this framework has helped her to stop defaulting to caring for everyone before herself.
One thing that I wish I'd figured out a lot sooner is anytime I feel, because I feel like women are expected to take care of everyone else, and it's selfish to take care of ourselves. But every time I find myself in a situation like that, first of all, will my kids be okay if I don't do this perfectly or don't do this one thing? And generally the answer is yes, they'll be fine. But then I also ask myself, when they grow up, if they decide to have children, what do I want it to be like for them? Because sometimes they're definitely demanding that I make this sacrifice or do this thing that's not necessarily good for me. And so that helps me like really see clearly, like, because you do actually have to do things that aren't always good for you or like are a sacrifice and difficult, but it helps you like kind of clarify, is this really crucial? Do I actually have to do this? Would it be a disaster if I didn't? And so asking myself, what kind of experience do I want my daughters to have if they become mothers, has really made it much easier to make those hard decisions.
What do you want that experience to be like for your daughters?
At this point in my life, I define myself as a writer and an editor, but for a long time, I define myself as a mom, and I want them to be able to... Having kids is a really great part of the human experience. If you choose that, you don't have to. And I think people are starting to realize that. But it's just one aspect of it. Women at this point generally wouldn't define themselves only as their husband's wife if they're married to a man. But we still do that with our children. And I think that it's certainly a very important part of your life and who you are if you have children. But I hope that they are able to define themselves in a bigger way that encompasses that, but also encompasses their career path and their passions and interests and their other relationships, so that they can just be like comfortable choosing to take care of themselves and meet their needs as well as their families.
Sarah and Raquel say that motherhood is ultimately an empowering experience.
Being forced to be independent, never really having a partner I could rely on, which is, you know, I don't wish that on anyone. But one positive result of that was discovering just how much I was capable of, because sometimes things just have to get done and you're the only person there to do them. And so you just do them, even though you're terrified and don't think you can do them, whether it's changing a diaper for the first time to guiding your child through high school into college, you know, just like the big picture of it, and to be successful at it, to, I mean, you know, not perfectly, nobody does anything perfectly, but to realize that, like, how much you're capable of. I'm the kind of person who has always lacked self-confidence sometimes and had a lot of imposter syndrome or feelings like I didn't deserve to pursue this or that thing that I wanted to learn how to do, afraid that I was going to look dumb because I didn't already know how to do it. But then I got thrown into parenting where I had no idea about anything and I had all these things that I just had to figure out a way to do, and it was so empowering. And so I would say, try to just ignore those fears that you have naturally that say, like, this is too hard, I can't do this, I'm going to look bad, or whatever is telling you you can't do the things that you really want to do or that you need to do in order to better yourself or your life. Do them anyway. Because even if you fail, you tried, and that's something too, you know, just even putting in that effort. And sometimes once you've tried once, it becomes so much easier to try again to figure out where your attempt went wrong and do it again and succeed. It's an amazing feeling, and then it empowers you to do more.
Even with all of the challenges they've laid bare for us to see in this podcast, Raquel encourages women who want to have children but who aren't married to just go for it.
Being a single mom for me is just another day. And if any other mom out there is like afraid to be a single mom, I would just want to tell them, you're gonna be fine. It's just another day. It's hard, yes, it's hard work, but it's just another notch on the belt, honestly.
I'm Donna Cleveland, and this has been the third episode of Women and Radio, a monthly podcast that explores how the beliefs we hold shape women's lives. A big thanks goes out to my cousin Chosi for designing my logo and for creating the artwork for this episode, Mira Oberdijk for the theme song and some of the other music featured in this episode, and to Cody Olivas for the recording help. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Women and Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. That way you'll be notified when I release new episodes each month. Coming up in November, I will be producing an episode about my experience going to last year's Amber Rose Slut Walk in LA and what I learned about rape culture and sexual expression while I was there. For this next episode, I want to hear from all of you. Have you heard of the Slut Walk movement? Have you been to a slut walk? These protests can be polarizing, and I'd love to hear your perspectives and firsthand experiences. If you've participated in a protest, what has it done for you? How well do you think this movement addresses rape culture and victim blaming? Please send me an email, or even better, a voice memo or other audio recording, so we can hear your voice as you tell us what you think. You can reach me at podcast@womenandradio.com.